Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We are broadcasting live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. You can also follow us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up on the program, DR Congo's President Joseph Kabila has announced that he will not stand in December's presidential elections. The influential Catholic Church in the DRC has reacted to the announcement.
It's a first battle won, because this is a process. The fact is that President Kabila respected the constitution.
And Zimbabwe's opposition and human rights groups say the country might be slowly slipping into anarchy due to the ongoing crackdown on opposition members.
Zimbabweans are used to violence for the last 38 years of mammoth proportions. But what we are clearly witnessing at the moment is beyond anything we've experienced before.
Also on the program, soaring temperatures and wildfires scorch Europe, forcing many to seek sanctuary in any possible shades and water sources they can lay their eyes on.
It is an action-packed program, but first, let's listen to some other stories making headlines around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. The president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Joseph Kabila, will not stand for re-election on December 23rd. Government spokesman Lambert Mendes said on Wednesday that former Interior Minister Emmanuel Ramazani Shadary will be the ruling coalition's candidate for the presidency. The announcement puts an end to years of speculation about whether Kabila would run for a third term, despite a two-term limit imposed by the constitution. World Health Organization experts today began carrying out Ebola vaccinations in Congo's latest deadly outbreak. Containing the virus is complicated by the presence of multiple armed groups in the northeast region that borders Uganda and Rwanda. WHO spokesperson Tarik Yazagevich told DW.
Our concern is the access. Are we going to be really able to get to all places where we need to go? So this is all something that we will have to work on and rely a lot on a support from the United Nations peacekeeping mission in the area so we can do our job.
According to the Congolese Health Ministry, at least 9 people have died since August 1st in the country's 10th Ebola outbreak. The human rights organization Amnesty International has accused European governments of being responsible for the growing number of dead refugees in the Mediterranean. A spokesperson for Amnesty said in London that Europe's policy of closed borders is the cause for the increase of drowned refugees, although the number of people trying to cross the Mediterranean fell this year. The German government has struck a deal with Spain to return migrants who travel on from the southern European country. Migrants originally registered in Spain on arrival will be returned within 48 hours after reaching Germany. The agreement will go into effect on Saturday. Berlin is negotiating a similar agreement with Greece and Italy. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Kenya's former 400-meters hurdles champion Nicholas Brett died in a car accident early on Wednesday, a day after returning from the African Athletics Championships in Nigeria. From Nairobi, Andrew Wasiki has more.
In 2015, Brett won a gold medal in the Beijing Championships, becoming the first Kenyan to win such a short-distance race category, beating Russian Denis Kudryavtsev. The athlete lost control of his vehicle, which rolled along the Eldoret Kapsabet Road, known to be foggy in the morning. Noah Kemei was there at the time.
I rushed to the scene and noticed there was a lot of smoke. The vehicle was upside down, and from the scene you could tell that the driver flew through the windshield after crashing.
Zimbabwean opposition figure Tendai Biti was released early on Wednesday shortly after police arrested him when he tried to flee to neighbouring Zambia. A leading member of the opposition movement of Democratic Change Alliance, Biti allegedly faces charges for inciting violence over the disputed result of the July 30 election. His lawyer said Biti is now in Zambia where he will seek political asylum. Kenya has arrested former governor of Nairobi, Evans Kideru, on suspicion of corruption-related crimes. Kideru is one of 11 government officials and business people named by Kenya's senior prosecutor as criminally culpable for embezzling public funds. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
This is DW's Africa Link program with me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe, also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We begin the program today in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where current President Joseph Kabila will not stand in December's presidential election. That's according to an announcement by the government spokesman, Lambert Mende.
The former Interior Minister, Emmanuel Ramazani Shandere, would be the ruling coalition's candidate. The announcement by Mende at a news conference puts an end to years of speculation about whether Kabila would defy term limits to run for a third term.
J'en viens maintenant à la conclusion des consultations que le président.
I would like to deliver the conclusions from consultations done by President Joseph Kabila Kabange. In his capacity as a head of state, he has nominated a person who will represent the ruling coalition that we are all aligned to in the upcoming presidential elections, and who we are going to accompany right now to the Electoral Commission to file his candidacy, and his name is Comrade Emmanuel Ramazani Shadari.
Du camarade Emmanuel Ramazani Shadari.
It's a first battle won, because this is a process. The fact is that President Kabila respected the constitution. But in our view, we have not won the war, only a battle. There is more to be gained, and we appeal to the population to mobilize. The winners are the Congolese population, our church, men and women of goodwill, the international community, and democracy.
That was the spokesperson for the Catholic Church reacting to the announcement made by the government spokesman Lambert Mende, announcing that Joseph Kabila will not stand for the presidency in December. Now, Zimbabwe's opposition and human rights groups say the country might be slowly developing into anarchy. As Columbus Mavunga reports in Harare, the opposition says state security forces are targeting its supporters in its strongholds, allegations that the government has denied.
This morning, Tedai Biti, one of the country's opposition leaders who is part of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, was arrested on Zimbabwe's border with Zambia as he was trying to enter the neighboring country to seek asylum.
Zimbabwe's main opposition says it is going ahead with its lawsuit challenging President Emmerson Mnangagwa's official victory in the July 30th polls. Nkululeko Sibanda, the spokesman for the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, says despite state securities cracking on the opposition, his party would go ahead and was hopeful of victory.
Zimbabweans are used to violence for the last 38 years, of mammoth proportions. But what we are clearly witnessing at the moment is beyond anything we've experienced before. Our experiences don't teach us how to deal with what we're seeing now, where soldiers, armed people traveling in unmarked vehicles, attacking citizens. You have a military killing citizens for nothing other than while they're doing their work, trying to keep their families alive.
Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, led by Nelson Chamisa, is challenging Mnangagwa's 50.8% victory declared by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission last week after this year's general election. His lawyer Tabani Mpofu had this to say to reporters about the petition.
I'm satisfied that the evidence is not just overwhelming as usually said in court, but it is embarrassing. That will give the court the opportunity to call it as it sees it. I've been a lawyer all my life. Law is what I know, and law is what I will do. There is no inauguration happening on Sunday and will not be concerned by it at any rate.
Reacting to the opposition allegations of harassment and clampdown by security agents and soldiers, Zimbabwe's Foreign Affairs Minister Sibusiso Moyo dismissed them, saying that the acts were not carried out by Zimbabwean soldiers, but rather by impersonators.
The military of this country generally is a well-trained force. It will not indulge in that. But in the event that there is a rogue soldier who obviously may be indisciplined, we are prepared with relevant evidence to take relevant steps. But what we are also witnessing is that there may be certain personalities who are purporting to be soldiers and are not soldiers and are going around imitating as if they are. All what we are realizing is that there is a lot of disinformation which is coming out in the social media.
That report was by Columbus Mavunga, and Tendai Biti has since been released.
We have your comments, of course. Charles Ongwele from Uganda says, President Mnangagwa is as much a dictator as his former chief of force. Cut from the same cloth, it's not yet Uhuru for Zimbabwe.
And Fobu Charles adds that if he is actually innocent, then why was he running away from Zimbabwe, he asks.
And Wanjiko Ba wonders, I'm not sure anyone in MDC is innocent in front of Mnangagwa. That is, in brackets, the law. It's like Mnangagwa is the law.
Is the law, yes indeed. And for sure, we shall come back to more of your comments.
Now, scientists recently warned that the Earth could heat up by 5 degrees Celsius.
Already, Europe and other parts of the world are experiencing a heat wave like never before. Wildfires are raging in Portugal and Spain. Earlier, I spoke to Sonia Dien from DW's Environment Department, and she starts by explaining what can be done to reduce the heat.
I think there are two aspects in terms of what can be done. One of them is, I think, the obvious discussion is around climate change and global warming. And while we all know about the Paris Agreement that was agreed by nearly 200 countries to reduce the emissions of greenhouse gases around the world, and that is moving forward, but people are saying it's not moving forward fast enough. Mm-hmm. So increasing the ambition around reducing greenhouse gases and basically accelerating this transition of the economies to more sustainable models would be one answer for what can be done to prevent such heat waves.
And now to the second step.
Right.
We already have the heat wave. So what can people do to prevent the effects of the heat wave?
Right. So talking about managing the effects of the heat wave, you have then it's everything from staying cool and managing the health impacts, because there are tremendous health impacts. When it gets too hot, literally people can't think as well, don't sleep as well. People who have heart problems are more susceptible to having serious health incidents. To then talking about agriculture and how agriculture has been impacted in Germany even this year, especially with this heat, the drought. It's caused crop losses of a quarter to a third, to even total losses in some regions. So how to manage that? Well, that's a tough one, because if there's not enough water, you can irrigate a bit more perhaps, but if you can't save the crops, then you have to just manage the loss of the crops.
What is the mind-boggling thing for our African listener who's wondering, hey, but we always receive extreme sun or extreme heat. What's the difference?
I think that it really boils down to how in Central Europe, it's a temperate, cool climate, and we're just not used to it. I mean, we're looking at temperatures that are maybe 10 degrees, 15 degrees Celsius above normal, and that is just really an extreme heat, you know, extreme temperature and extreme dryness. In the winter, it gets very cold here, and we're used to that. It happens every year. So we have heating, we have our thick coats, we can manage that. But in the summer, we're not used to these 40 degree temperatures, 35 degree temperatures. I think normal would be about 20 something, 23 degrees. And so we just don't know how to handle it, basically, because it's unusual for us.
That was Sonia Dean from DW's Environment.
Of course, Wanjiko, the heat has sent tongues wagging. And from his unique perspective on the International Space Station, Alexander Guest sent back images of Germany parched and brown due to the heat wave. You know Alexander Guest, the astronaut, you know?
Absolutely.
But the situation in his home region should improve before he returns, he says. And for those who, this is Alexander Guest, you know, I mean, for those who want to see these pictures, just go to our webpage, dw.com. There's a beautiful article and him in space at the ISS. And of course, the images he sent back, they are really packed up. I mean, it's brown everywhere. Can you have a picnic right now?
No, not in this heat, no. And we also see Suni from Ghana, who's listening in from Ghana. We have Tamukum, who is in Dubai. Tell us what you think. Have you heard about the heat wave? Have you been listening? Write to us on Facebook, DW Africa, and we'll be sure to read your comments as and when we can.
And Harry says, I'm listening from Grand Bassac County, Liberia. Thank you for bringing the rest of Africa closer to me via your platform. Oh, this is so encouraging.
It is. It is. Keep sharing. Keep sharing this program so that we can bring more people together.
Exactly.
You are listening to Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany with me, Wanjiku Maura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Nigeria at crossroads, politics being played every day. So what's going on? I put that question to our own Usman Shehu.
It is not new in Nigeria. During last regime of Jonathan, he did not only send security, but they locked, even with key, they locked the whole gate of the parliament. The then speaker of the parliament had to jump over the fence.
And of course, he was telling me about the parliament. Yesterday, there were, you know, cops who raided the parliament. And I mean, it was crazy, you know, the sanctity of the parliament. This is the legislature, the second most powerful organ of any government.
Of any government. And this is Nigeria, one of Africa's biggest economy that we are talking about. And we'll also be hearing about table banking. What is it? Well, stay tuned to find out about the revolutionary financial solution that is changing the lives of women in Kenya. But first, we get back to Nigeria, where the Senate President Bukola Saraki has said that he will not yield to calls for him to leave his post. Since he announced his defection from the ruling All Progressive Congress, APC, the party has been calling on Saraki to leave the post since his new party, the People's Democratic Party, does not have a majority in the Senate.
Well, police and security forces temporarily blockaded the entrance to Nigeria's parliament on Tuesday in what the presidency described as a rogue action to take over the National Assembly. The act led to the sacking of the Director General of the State Security Service, Lawal Daura. Usman Shehu from DW's Hausa Service sums up for us recent developments. Take a listen.
Actually, what has taken place, first of all, it is a real division within the government itself. It is not only the head of the state security services who was sacked. He's not the only problem. The chairman of the party and his loyalists who want to oust the current Senate president are the people who organized this. Yes, the presidency has the right to sack, because if the director of state security services can take a decision without informing them, I think it is very, very wrong. But they have to also sack the people in the presidency who ordered this.
That was Usman Shehu Wanjiku. He started off saying, but that is not new in Nigeria. And interestingly, there's a comment here from Chikere Nosu who says, there's nothing new in Nigerian democracy. All that is happening is personal interests, not about the people. Politicians come and go, but the problem they are creating remains. These sets of politicians will be back off from active politics. I mean, let's throw it to the people and they tell us what they think about this story.
Absolutely. We have another comment from Rita Lobo who says, as a nation, we shall overcome this recklessness through the power of we, the people.
Well, keep the debate going on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Joram says, it's quite unfortunate how democracy is deteriorating on a daily basis under Buhari government. We'll be back right after this.
On the spot.
Table banking. This is an increasingly popular concept. It's a strategy in which members save together and are able to borrow from a kitty. Now, the idea was developed around 2009 in Kenya by the government through the Poverty Eradication Commission and a Vision 2030. It's built on an idea that already existed amongst groups of women, and that is the so-called merry-go-rounds, which is where a group saves together and each month, in turn, one member will receive a payout from the kitty.
And interestingly, the table banks are helping the women in particular save who are unable to meet the conditions demanded by traditional banks. Diana Wanyonyi went along to one group in Hilifi County near Mombasa to find out more.
It is a sunny Monday morning and a group of women are gathered for their weekly table banking meeting. Today's meeting is held in Margaret Nyale's house. Members are punctual, perhaps because they would be fined 50 Kenyan shillings, equivalent to 0.43 euro cents or 0.50 US cents for lateness. The meeting opens with prayers in Kiswahili. The name of this group is the Tumaini Saving Internal and Lending Community, SILC. Tumaini is a Swahili word meaning hope. Each month, members will meet and place their savings and other contributions in the pot. They are then able to borrow either short or long term against the communal fund. A member borrows money according to the savings she has accumulated. Margaret Nyale is known as a mother of the group. They call her Mama Kiriba because she started the group and has persuaded lots of other women to join her.
Tunakopeshana, kuna pesa ya
dharura. We lend money from the funds. There is always some set aside for emergencies and savings. I feel our group has been very positive. Women are shining because of silk, and we are still growing. Currently, we've reached 3 neighborhoods.
The group sits around the table, paying the contributions to one woman who counts money and notes it all down in an accounts book. There are 3 metal tins on the table, one green, one red, and one white. A larger blue tin, covered in padlocks, will hold the other 3 tins when the table banking session is over. Bahati Moringa describes the significance of the tins.
The tin with the green lid is for saving. It has a lot of money in it. At the moment, we have 36,000 shillings, that is 309 euros. The tin with the blue lid is for emergencies, and it has 3,000 shillings, that is 26 euros in it. The money in this tin comes from our registration fees. Each new member pays 150 shillings, equivalent to 1.29 euros to join, and at the close of each year, every member pays 50 shillings. The last tin is for donations. If someone has a bit of extra money, they can donate it, and this money is used to help anyone who has a sudden problem, or if we need to buy T-shirts.
To keep everyone's money safe, the 3 tins are put inside the padlocked blue box, and 3 women will each be selected to keep one key until the next meeting. The box also moves around the group for safekeeping.
After borrowing, when there is a lot of money, we take it to the bank.
Each member contributes according to their financial means. Some contribute as little as 200 Kenyan shillings and some as much as 1,000 shillings. Interest earned from the loans varies depending on the amount of money someone has borrowed. The interest paid goes back into the group's kitty. Once the money has been collected and accounted for, it's time for the borrowing to start. Christine Mapenzi needs a loan this month to take her sick baby to hospital.
I have borrowed 4,000. It helps a lot. The first time I borrowed, I bought a new bed, wall unit, and dressing table. And now I'm doing fine. At the end of every year, I take the money I have saved to the bank. So far, I've managed to save 100,000 shillings. That's 859 euros, or $1,000.
And it's not just emergency fund the group can supply. Margaret Karisa and Bahati Moringa have used the money to support themselves and their families.
I have been able to educate my 4 children in secondary school. 2 of them have already completed their education, while 2 of them are yet to finish. If it wasn't for this group, maybe they wouldn't have been educated at all. Borrowing the money from the group motivates me to make sure I find work to repay my loan. I started by contributing 100 shillings, then 500, and now I contribute 1,000 per week.
I separated from my husband, and now I have managed to create my own home. Before I joined this group, my life was moving in the wrong direction. But since I joined the group, my children have started to go to school, they have good clothes, are in good health, and I'm feeling much better now too.
Once everyone who needs a loan has got one, the boxes are locked into the blue tin and the padlock keys are turned. The World Bank's own data shows that in developing economies, women are still far less likely than men to have their own bank accounts. And that shortfall is being made up by groups like this, which provide security and social motivation to save small amounts, which help make life easier. The social support in the group is also strong, and members seem to enjoy their weekly and monthly meetings. For DW, this is Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa, Kenya.
Well, many thanks then, Awanyonyi, for that report. And before we continue, Oba Ibrahim says he's listening from Cameroon and is saying, I think Kabila has taken a good move to salvage the political uncertainty in DRC. It's worth other African leaders to emulate.
And Nasir Mohammed, also on our Facebook page, writes, move on. This is with regards to Kabila. Inheriting your position from your father is not an invitation to stay on for life. Have a nice civilian life, Mr. Kabila, he adds.
Frida George says he's listening from the Gambia. Many thanks, George. And of course, Ruterika Alex also joined the wagon or the debate. And Princess Musong, he's from Dubai, he's also listening.
And Ali Rahema is listening from Moshi in Tanzania. Indeed, it feels like a meeting point for all Africans.
And why not? We are bringing the stories that matter from the continent. We'll be back just after this.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, commercial charcoal production and harvesting of rosewood has been banned at the biggest woodland forest in the northern region of Ghana, Tamale. Huge foreign demand for wood and charcoal has caused a massive environmental destruction and as a result of the invasion of charcoal producers and loggers.
Many of the producers are financed by foreign nationals, including the Chinese. The traditional authority and the local assembly gave the producers a short deadline, which already passed, to pack out of the forest. Here is Maxwell Souk with more of this report.
The loggers at this forest at Damangu in the West Gunja district, northern region, are rushing to salvage all they can before authorities drive them out forcefully. Fatou Isahaku is sponsoring some of the loggers.
We just want to pick this one so that anybody who even can't use his money to cut these logs will not run at a loss. This is Monday, Sunday. So today is Friday. So we have some 3 days to just cover up. So that's why we are seriously picking them up.
Commercial logging and charcoal production has been banned in this woodland forest. The community is supporting this decision as Osman Wagazi, leader of the West Gunja Youth Association in Damangu, explains.
The king of the area and district chief executive, including the district police commander, have all backed the decision. By Monday, all of them should pack out of the forest. If not, we will take serious action against them.
Among the over 100 tribes in Ghana are the Sisala people, whose traditional occupation is charcoal production and logging. They migrated to the Gunja land from the Upper East region of Ghana. Salifu Gafaro, a youth activist, is accusing the newcomers of invading this forest.
Just take a look at this, our area. There are no trees again. They cut all. The rosewood, everything, they cut it and cover charcoal.
But the loggers are not acting alone. Foreign demand for timber and charcoal motivates dealers like Fatou Isahaku to sponsor loggers. But as Northern Regional Forestry Manager Bernard Tabil explains, government directives to ban logging here are often not followed.
Government make decisions and people are able to go near and maneuver, and by the time they realize the decision has been revised. I can sit in my office and say, make my decision this. Look, by the time they realize, there'll be one or two influences and I will last man. So we are praying the ban works.
This woodland forest once contained the best flora and trees in the northern part of the country. But rosewood harvesters and charcoal producers have felled down thousands of trees and exposed the area to degradation. For indigenous like Salifu Gafaro, more has to be done.
If persuasion fails, force must apply. When you tell them to go and they refuse, we will find the means that we use to beat them and drive them away. So that is the only thing that we will do, because last time you drove them away and they came back.
The loggers have been paying taxes to the chiefs and district assemblies. So whether this ban will work or not remains to be seen.
That report by Maxwell Souk in northern Ghana.
Now, we still have many comments for you coming about the Nigerian story that we did about the current politics in the country. Habib Magula says African politics is already dented. Africa needs panel beating in terms of politics, and Western should stop confusing those who want to take power by supplying them arms.
While we are still receiving so many comments, I see one from Zion here who asks, what were legislators doing at Parliament around 5 a.m.?
Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. With that, we come to the end of today's show. On behalf of our colleagues in the back room there, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiku Maura.
Bye for now.